We're going to pick up the second part of our study of dealing with rejection, how to respond to deep hurt. This is the little booklet that was written by John Miller. Just to remind you, we considered in our first session some of the popular responses to deep hurt. One was to get even. Second response is to suppress anger. A third response, similar to that, is to rise above that occasion. We talked about the errors of those. I'm going to go on to elaborate on a biblical response to the deep hurt that we sometimes suffer in this life, and that is to forgive. And to forgive completely. That's the title that Miller gives to this response. We've talked about forgiveness before, so I want to very briefly remind you of the biblical response of forgiveness, that the forgiveness of others rises mostly from the fact that you have been forgiven by Christ. That implies as well that you need forgiveness. As we started down this road in our discussion of the first section of the book, there are many times that we have contributed to the conflict or contributed to the hurt that we've received. In the example that Miller gives at the beginning of his book, you might remember that a woman named Mary has been deeply hurt by a daughter-in-law and then by her son, and hurt by some of the assumptions that she had made, and then the rejection of her daughter-in-law. She found that she couldn't get over that rejection, and she came face to face not only with her daughter's rejection, but with her own sin. And if you read the booklet, you'll find that this is an actual situation, and Miller goes on to describe a conversation with this woman where she discovers not only that she's been hurt, but she discovers her own contribution to the conflict that she had with her daughter-in-law. She came to recognize her own anger, and when pressed, she came to discover and uncover her pride. Miller doesn't go into it, but I could see him gently helping her to see how a superior type of attitude that pride often takes would have contributed to the conflict and would drive a wedge between her and her daughter-in-law. So one of the first important things to do when dealing with rejection is to pursue personal forgiveness, to consider in your own life if there is a log in your own eye before you go to take the speck out of the offender's eye. We pursue personal forgiveness with God and with the individual with whom we have that conflict. That can be a very hard process to accomplish, in that when you go to one who has deeply offended you and you have discovered, the Lord has uncovered in your heart a way that you've contributed to the conflict, it's very possible, and I would say even typical of a response, for you to go to that individual to confess your own sins that have contributed with the attitude that I've said I'm sorry, now it's your turn. And to wait with expectation for that return, well, I'm sorry, I messed up too, I sinned against you. Only to find that it doesn't come, and you walk away even more offended. Well, the error there is that you've gone not to seek forgiveness, but you've gone to get a confession from that other person. And you're using your own confession to try to work that out of the other individual. So in this case, you need to be very careful that if you do discover that you have sinned against that individual, then you need to address that and only that as you go to that individual. If God has laid it on your heart that you have sinned, you go and you say, "Forgive me, I sinned against you in my pride against you." And I can see how that drove a wedge against you and me and my son. Please forgive me. And then stop. That's very difficult to do, but you have to do that. If confession from the other does come, then yes, interact and joyfully interact with that. But if it doesn't, don't expect it, and don't try to work that in. So what happens if you take these steps of dealing with your own sin and there's still no resolution of this difficulty of the wrong that has come against you? I'm going to draw in not only what Miller says here, but some lessons I've learned from the Peacemaker Ministry of Ken Sandy. We have his book in our library, and you can read some more there if you'd like to. So if you've read the booklet by Miller, you'll find that I'm drawing in him and in some other things here that will give biblical responses. So there are times when we are rejected or hurt deeply. And one of the things that you do need to take stock of, and what Miller describes as the first step, is to see that it isn't wrong to feel disappointed by a hurt that has been inflicted on us by someone else. Remember that one of the wrong responses that we sometimes make to rejection or to deep hurt is to minimize it or to sweep it under the carpet and say, "Oh, it's nothing," or to take our anger and suppress it, or just to ignore the situation. And that's actually a response that flees the real hurt that is there. It's proper to acknowledge that hurt and disappointment has taken place. In fact, you'll find that if you minimize the hurt, which is different than forgiving, and I'll make that distinction here in a little bit. If you minimize the hurt, you'll find that you'll never be able to move forward in a relationship with that individual. Disappointments will always linger. As much as you think that you have it covered up under the carpet, it will continue to linger. There, instead of minimizing it, we have recourse to take those real hurts and those real disappointments as a reality, and to begin to address them. One of those ways to address them is to second step here is to take that to the Lord in prayer and admission. See that disappointment then in the light of your own relationship to Christ. I'll remind you of James chapter 1, which describes the variety of trials that you face as being designed by a sovereign God for the good of His children. That means that when you experience real hurts and real sins against you, that they aren't outside of God's sovereign power or design. And you have recourse to go to Him and to admit that God, this really hurt, and I'm not sure what to do with it, and I'm not sure what you have in mind for this. But God, please show me. Show me what you are wanting me to learn through this. Admit the disappointment, admit the hurt, and ask for God to teach you why He sovereignly has you there and what that good purpose is. Next step is to overlook minor offenses. I think we did talk about this a little bit last time. Not every mistake is a sin, and not every sin needs confrontation. Some sins do, some sins need to be addressed, but often this side of glory, and given our nature of being saints who still sin, it's a rich Christian virtue to forgive minor sins, and to do so generously and wholeheartedly. And by forgive, what I mean is to no longer count that sin against that individual. Just as Christ has forgiven you, He no longer counts your sin against you. He doesn't remember it. He puts it as far away as east is from the west. The Peacemaker ministry has four promises of forgiveness that I like to keep in mind. They are these. Number one, I will not think about this incident. Number two, I will not bring up this incident again and use it against you. Number three, I will not talk to others about this incident. Number four, I will not allow this incident to stand between us or hinder our personal relationship. That's very different than minimizing or sweeping something under the carpet. It admits the sin, it admits the hurt, but it forgives, and forgives generously and as Christ has forgiven you. So forgive, and the Bible uses that term, overlook minor offenses. The next step is in that forgiveness is to recognize that sometimes there is what Ken Sandy calls a positional forgiveness and then a transactional forgiveness. If there is a time when offenses are too serious to overlook, but you have not had the opportunity or the ability to speak with that individual privately about that or to come to terms about it, there is still the opportunity for you to forgive positionally. And by that, Sandy means the idea of forgiving according to these promises, forgiving as Christ has forgiven you, so that whatever has taken place against you does not have a hold on you. Think of those individuals who have been hurt by someone who is long since dead, and that offense still lingers over them. There's no way for that other individual to ever come to you to seek forgiveness. It's impossible. Does that mean that you never deal with what happened to you? Well, instead, there is opportunity to make a commitment before God and to forgive that one from the heart and to promise to strive to maintain a loving and merciful attitude towards that one who has offended you. There is then a transactional forgiveness that is it can be a part of that process. And that is when you have the opportunity then to go to the one who has sinned against you, whether that be rejection or offense of words or of action, you can go to that person and communicate with them the offense that has taken place and to seek the reconciliation or the peace that comes from transactional forgiveness. That distinction is one that I think is helpful in the variety of relationships that we have, that warns against us from allowing a root of bitterness to grow up in our hearts, and urges upon us the commitment to forgive as we have been forgiven. Several other comments that you can pursue in other times and other places. Forgiveness is not a feeling. Forgiveness is not forgetting. Forgiveness is not excusing. Forgiveness is a decision. It's a putting off of the debt that is against that other individual. And it emphasizes a positive change of attitude and stance towards the one that has offended you. I've crammed a lot into a short devotional here this afternoon. I'll pause there and ask if you have any questions or comments. Vicki? That's a good question. I think that's where I start with the first step of, is this something that rises to the point of needing transactional forgiveness, or is this something that is a minor offense that I can acknowledge as being sinful, but to freely forgive and to let love cover that? I think that ought to be our first line of defense, as letting love cover a multitude of sins. But beyond that, then, are we being oversensitive? That's a possibility. But if it's something that you can't get over with your own relationship to the Lord, then it's time to draw in the steps of peacemaking and of reconciling with someone who has hurt you. Liz?
I wonder if you could just repeat again what forgiveness is not.
Right. These I think I drew from the Peacemaker Ministry. Forgiveness is not a feeling. In other words, it's not because you feel like you haven't been hurt. You have been hurt. So, forgiveness is not forgetting, not minimizing or sweeping it under the carpet. Forgiveness is not excusing, oh, it was nothing. Forgiveness is a decision. Anything else? Dave.
The idea that one of the words I think is helpful to emphasize is the multitude of sins that are easily being willing to overlook. The reason it's a multitude, at least part of it, because there are lots of people who interact with this every day. And there are lots of opportunities. And if you believe you have a duty to think well of your neighbor, to believe the best about people around you, to be patient and long-suffering, I find it gets easier and easier to throw more of those sins into the multitude category that I should be willing to overlook. There's a lot going on around us that we rarely understand why the people do what they do. Why it's easy to be offended at times, But to step back and say, well, there's a lot being asked of me to forgive these things. It can be helpful to remember that it's multitude. I mean, there's lots and lots of occasions that we step back and choose to overlook these things.
Yeah. In God's providence, I know that many do the same with me. We'll draw this one to a close here and want to give opportunity for prayer requests to be given today.